Good evening. Thanks for coming on this wild and woolly day. Got snow and rain and who knows what else. So I'm Todd Nielsen. I will be doing the meditation and Aaron Dank will be doing the Dhamma talk. So let's get started. If you're sitting in a chair, you can either cross your legs or if you're sitting in the Western manner, as they call it, put both feet on the ground. You want to be grounded. And then imagine that string that's tied to the top of your head, pulling your head up, straightening your spine up. So we want to do a relaxation first. We want to relax our body, and we want to relax our mind. So let's start with relaxing our body. Put your hands in your lap or on your thighs or wherever it's comfortable. And then direct your thoughts to the muscles around your eyes, or really direct them there. And relax those muscles around the eyes, including on your forehead and your cheeks. A lot of us squint, and our eyes may be tired from reading or at the computer. Just relax those muscles. Just feel them relaxing and getting loose. Just relax. Now go down to your jaw, your cheeks again in your jaw, and your nose. Try not to flare your nostrils unless you have to. Your upper lip, your lower lip. Don't clench your teeth. You put your tongue up behind your teeth on your upper palate. That will stop the production of saliva, supposedly. And then relax your jaw muscles. Make sure they're relaxed. Now direct your attention to the neck. There's a lot of tension stored up in our necks. You might want to move your head back and forth, up and down a couple times, just to relax your neck. Just make sure that string is pulling up on your head, keeping your back straight. So relax your neck. Then move down to your shoulders, a lot of tension in your shoulders. Just direct your attention right to those muscles and relax them. Then down from your shoulders down to your arms, your upper arms down to your elbows, your forearms, down to your wrists, the palm of your hand, the back of your hand, your knuckles, and out to the tips of your fingers. You may want to clench and unclench your hands a couple times. Stretch out those fingers. All this time, be aware of your back being kept straight up and down. Now let's move to our rib cage and our lungs. Now is the time to take a very deep breath and let it out slowly, once or twice, and to relax those muscles in the rib cage. and the abdomen. Just relax. Now move down to your pelvis and your hip joints. Just really feel them and relax them as much as you can. Down your thighs, down to your knees, down to your forelegs, your shins and your calves, your ankles, and then your heels, the soles of your feet, your insteps, the balls of your feet, and then your toes. You might want to wiggle your toes a little bit just to feel them to be relaxing. Now do a quick scan, the top of your head down to your toes. Make sure everything's relaxed as much as you can. You might want to take a couple of breaths again, deep breaths. Now we want to relax mentally. We've all been running around all day today, doing chores, driving around, reading or watching the TV, working, grocery shopping, all the things we've been doing. Just for now, put those out of your mind. If they're important, you'll remember them later. And now think of the things we have to do this evening. And tomorrow, put those out of your mind. You can recall them later if they're important. Bring your mind to the present moment. Think of the things you can hear, the traffic, your breathing, maybe your stomach's rumbling, your chair's creaking. Some wheezing. See if you can find any odors, maybe of the flowers or some incense. Any light maybe coming into your eyelids. Just be aware of everything around you. In the present moment. Feel your clothes against the skin. Chair or the cushion underneath you. The floor. Now let's move on to loving kindness meditation. The Buddha said this is the most important practice that we can do in order to purify our minds of ill will, anger, and fear. Try to think of a time when you were very happy. Maybe when you were a child or a young adult or even now. Try to rekindle those feelings in your heart those feelings of happiness and love for the world. Think of it as a light in your heart, a burning light, like the sun. The first one we want to send our loving kindness to is our very own selves. So we can repeat those three famous words. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May no harm come to me. May no suffering come to me. May no illness come to me. May no fear, anxiety, sadness, depression, ill will, anger. No suffering. May I be well, happy, and peaceful. Now imagine the rays coming out of that light in your heart, and send those same thoughts to your family members and your close friends, those people you really love. You can think of them one by one if you want to, or as a group. But just imagine that their faces are lit up by this light coming out of your heart, this light of loving kindness. May my loved ones be well, happy, and peaceful. May they be free of suffering, illness, anger, anxiety, sadness. May they be happy. May they be peaceful. Think of them one by one if you wish. May my loved ones be well, happy, and peaceful. Now extend the range a little bit to your acquaintances, people you may see often, but they're not really friends, maybe your neighbors, coworkers, people you see in the shops or on the street, other people here in the temple. Maybe your letter carrier. Different people. Post office. May my acquaintances be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to them. May no suffering come to them. May no anger come to them. May no anxiety come to them. May my acquaintances be well, happy, and peaceful. And now comes the most difficult part of our loving kindness practice. Think of someone who irritates you, who's been cruel to you, insulted you, hurt you. Could be someone you know closely, it could be a public figure. It's difficult, but send loving kindness to them also. This will do a great deal to purify your mind. May my difficult people or my difficult person be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to them. May no suffering come to them. May no illness come to them. May they live in peace. Just imagine the rays coming out of your heart. Now expand the range of those loving kindness rays spreading out to everyone in this room, everyone in Woodstock, Illinois, in this country, all around the world, including the animals, pets, livestock, wild animals, fishes and the birds, the insects, whatever living beings there may be. Think of those rays spreading all the way around the world. Especially think of those who are suffering in war now and in illness and in natural disasters. Not much we can do physically, but we can send them these loving kindness thoughts. And now we really want to spread those rays all across the universe. Try to imagine them spreading out in front of you as far as you can, as far as you can imagine, behind you, below you, above you, left and right, encompassing the entire universe. Whatever suffering beings there are in this universe, may they be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to them. May no suffering come to them. May no illness come to them. Now pull your focus back to yourself, and once again, of wellness, happiness, peacefulness, free of suffering. Now let's go to our silent meditation. Now's a good time to check your posture and do a little stretch if you want. So we all, for our silent meditation, we all have a breath, our breath, and we want to concentrate on our breath. It's the easiest thing to concentrate on. And one of the purposes of doing this is to see how quickly thoughts arise in the mind. Probably about 1 second after you try not to think of something, you'll think of something. And what you can do is to evaluate these thoughts that arise and then drop them. So we're learning how to evaluate our thoughts and how to drop thoughts. So you'll be one step ahead of most people in the world who just sort of run on autopilot without thinking. So direct your attention to your breath. Notice that some breaths are long, some are short, some are deep, some are shallow. Some are exactly the same, one after the other. You might yawn or you might sigh. So when your mind starts wandering, drop the thoughts and come back to your breath. You can drop those wayward thoughts and return to your breath. Now let's take a look at ourselves. Check our bodies. It should be more relaxed. Maybe you're more agitated. And check our minds. It should be more calm, relaxed, or also maybe more agitated. And put your hands in front of your heart now and make a promise to ourselves. Make a promise that we'll try to meditate every day, if only for a few moments. It's also a good idea every hour or so just to take a few seconds to check on yourself. Make sure you're not getting hyper. Make sure you're relaxing and sending out those loving kindness thoughts. May peace be with all of you. Thank you. Okay, let's do the chanting starting on page 4. I change my glasses. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Anicca vata saṅkhāra upādavāya dhammino upājitvā nirujanti. Te saṃ upa samo sukho sabbe satta avera hontu. Sabbe satta abhyapaccha hontu. Sabbe satta anicca hontu. Sabbe satta sukhi atanam pariharantu. Mano pumbang gamadama. Mano seta mano maya. Manasache padutena. Basatihwa karotihwa tato nam dukkha manveti chakam vavahato padam. Mano pumbang gamadama. Mano seta mano maya. Manasache pasanena basatihwa karotiwa. Tato nam sukha manveti chayava anapayini. Mind is the forerunner of all states. Mind is chief, mind made are they. If with a corrupted mind one should either speak or act, suffering follows caused by that, as does the wheel follow the ox's hoof. Mind is the forerunner of all states. Mind is chief, mind made are they. If with a clear and confident mind one should either speak or act, happiness follows caused by that, as one shadow that never leaves. We believe in generosity towards others. We believe the skillful noble path is marked by generosity. We believe generosity has many levels. Think generously, speak generously, act generously. We believe generosity is the heart of our spiritual practice, and this practice allows us to become more open, accepting, and forgiving. We believe extending generosity to ourselves and others is a direct way of healing division, bringing joy, and nurturing this spiritual community for years to come. My wish: may I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector for those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those with an ocean to cross, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those who lack shelter, and a servant to all in need. By means of this meritorious deed, may I never join the unwise, only the wise, until the time I attain nirvana. Thank you all. Okay, Aaron. Time for your show. You're having trouble?
Good evening to this small and wonderful group, huh? Who brave the up and downs of the impermanence, right, of the of the weather in Illinois. My name is Erin Dank. I've been a Sangha member for quite some time. I'm also on the board, so that's kind of my part here. One of the things I want to start off, though, before I do my Dhamma talk, is that if you'll notice, so Todd's doing meditation, I'm doing the Dhamma talk. We're not monks. One of the things I think that's really wonderful is that we as lay people are invited sometimes to participate. And I feel for me, it's a way for me to actually practice what the monks have been teaching me. And so I can share that with all of you. Todd can share his practice and meditation. So I think it's a wonderful thing that we're able to do without our dear monks here. So thank you all for being here. I am going to do a talk about identity and the idea of true self and no self. And so I'm going to try to be brief so we can all go home and not be caught in the snowstorm or whatever is going on outside. So the way I do my Dhamma talks, I like to provide a bit of a structure. So the beginning is going to be a little bit of a storytelling and an introduction, and then the Buddhist teaching in response to that. And then the ending being kind of our understanding or awareness, or at least for me, what I understand. Ram Dass, if you all are familiar with Ram Dass, and his lecture, Sacred in the Everyday, tells the story of his life as, quote, somebody training. This somebody training from parents developed into, quote, thought forms of who he was and who others are, ideas of identity from the outside. He recalled being reassured from the minds of others that, quote, I was doing it right. He goes on to say, quote, it was as if I was wearing a piece of clothing that didn't fit right. I would scrunch my body up to fit perfectly so I could be the somebody everyone wanted me to be, end quote. So my somebody training consisted of layers of clothing consisting of the fabrics of obedience, accommodation, perfectionism, duty, denial of physical pain, and how I looked. Today I see that certain changes and losses in my life have been a tedious process of letting go of the clothes that don't fit. Who am I, and why am I so anxious about even asking this question? Some of the examples for me would be as in terms of identity and change is that recently, about a month ago, I retired. And I retired from work that I had done for over 40 years. That life, I worked in the mental health profession. I'm an art therapist. But that was my life. That is something I knew. I knew how to be present, and it was very much fabric that I embraced and I wore. It was also, though, after a while, it became itchy fabric. It didn't feel like it worked anymore for me. And another way I defined it is my cup was full. So after 40 years, I realized that it was time for me to move on. I live now in space or in day-to-day life of not quite knowing, should I take care of anyone? Should I help anyone? Does anyone have a problem? That still goes on through in my mind. So those are kind of thought forms that Ram Dass talks about as well as the Buddha talks about that. So those are some thoughts I have that are left over from that identity. And the second identity that was very strong for me and probably primary was caretaker. My father died 2 years ago. I was his primary caretaker for the last part of his life. I was with him every day as he died from dementia. And when he died, that fabric, that suit, that robe definitely was definitely aware of that falling from me. I was not a daughter anymore. I did not have a parent anymore. And both of my parents passed away. So that identity definitely was gone. And then in my past, I mean, we can all think of, my examples aren't anything unusual, but we can all think of identities and roles we've played and changes and losses. But another identity I had for a period was a cancer survivor. And when I was diagnosed 12 years ago with breast cancer, so that was an identity. And if, I don't know if any of you have experienced having any illness or knowing anyone that has an illness, but our society sometimes identifies us as that illness. So that was another time in my life where my sense of myself physically, as a woman, emotionally, was rattled as far as who am I. So those are just some personal examples of how different aspects of myself, things that happened to me or how I was raised, how that informed my identity. And it provided those, provided ways for me to think about things, and sometimes not in the best way, but it provided ways for me to think about who I am and who I am not. So what does Buddhist teaching say about this idea of identity? Buddhism teaches that personal identity is delusional, that each of us is a self that turns out to not actually exist. Anatta, or Anatman, the doctrine of the no-self, states that our sense of a self or identity is impermanent. So then I went and looked further in terms of understanding this a little more, and I found an article in Tricycle by Jack Kornfield, if you're familiar with him. He's an American psychologist that really brought Buddhism to Americans in a way that we can understand it. But he wrote an article called Identity and Selflessness in Buddhism, No Self or True Self, Examining Buddhist Notions of Identity and Selflessness. And he describes several aspects or dimensions of understanding identity. So he starts off with, at the Buddha's enlightenment, he came to discover that we do not exist as separate selves. We are one self, a true self. The separate selves, or the parts of us that we may present to different people in different, in different situations, are not necessarily reality. The fact is that there's one of us that is constant no matter where we are or who we are with. Secondly, Buddha had a view of being human in terms of five different processes. And they are always changing. And they are your physical body, your feelings, your perceptions, your responses, and your consciousness. Next, the idea of the false self arises whenever we grasp at an identity or any of the above processes that Buddha talks about as far as being human. We fear the loss of this identity, and we believe that we are nothing if we don't have this particular identity. The false self is also a very psychological term in terms of that we put on a mask. We put on a particular mask. We behave a certain way in front of, when we're with certain people mostly, when we're in relationship with people, and we present this false self because we believe this is how we should be in that situation. A very classic example would be if you've heard the language of codependency. Where people are being something they're not to make other people, the other person in their relationship happy. But we probably all struggle with a false self, or we've had that false self maybe raise its ugly head in our lives, and then we've had to grapple with it in some way. But again, the Buddha is talking about that is also delusional, right? That's not reality. And what happens when we come over, when we become attached to that false self, it can become very scary to let that go. It can create a lot of anxiety in us, maybe depression, because we've become so attached. We believe we are holding on. We're so attached to that identity as if it is real. Next, he talks about this idea of no self, and that what, and how I understand it, and maybe Todd has better understanding, but what Cornfield talks about is that it has to do with almost this rising above the ego, letting go of the ego sense of yourself, and also a sense of being that you are connected, there's an interconnectedness between you and other living beings, so it's not all about you. And so the no-self is not so much being apathetic or withdrawing from society. It's a sense of almost elevating, transcending from your physical self. Is that true? Yeah, okay. It can be when I first heard that. I don't know about if anyone else has ever heard that term. I was really off-put by that idea of a no-self. You know, what do you mean there's no self? You know, how can that be? Being the psychologist, right? You know, how can that be? But I think it's a helpful term in terms of maybe pondering on it and thinking about it, is this idea of how can I transcend from, like, right now in this room? You know, how can I, if I'm feeling particularly anxious in my body right now, while I look around me and I see other people, they're meditating or they're listening to my voice, and so how am I connected that way beyond this person that's sitting there? And then finally, the thread that goes through all of this as far as the Buddhist ideas and teachings about identity is impermanence. And the fact is, and this is really the core of Buddhist teaching, is that we as human beings are impermanent. Our roles are impermanent. Our identity is impermanent. Our relationships are impermanent. Everything, the weather is impermanent. Everything changes. And I think for me, I've come to a place in my life as of today, understanding that all of these thought forms or ideas I have had about who I am or who people expect me to be are actually impermanent. They're not, when I stand here right now and talk to all of you, that doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't really matter, right? I'm right here right now with all of you. I'm speaking. I can feel my feet on the ground, leaning on the podium. That's where I'm at. This is who I am right now. And that's a very hard practice. I just turned 65, so I would say it's taken me this long to be aware enough that where I am right now, this is reality, I guess, if you want to use the word reality. This is what matters. As far as my own awareness, one of the things I was really struck by is when Todd was doing the meditation, and this is also what Buddha recommended, is that meditation or being connected to your body is really the path towards true self. And as Todd was walking, taking us through the whole meditative process, he was helping us connect, sometimes in great detail, with our body, parts of our body. That is us. That's who we are. So to learn how to let go of false selves, robes that don't fit anymore, we have to almost go back to the source, which is our body, and which is the breath. And with that awareness of the breath, and even feeling it going through our organs and lubricating our organs, sitting on the cushion, we come to ourselves. And that's, for me, being able to do that, it's created a lot of calm in me and a lot less worry about who I am, who am I supposed to be, where am I supposed to go, who I'm supposed to help, who needs me, is it going to rain or snow today? All those things don't matter anymore, right? It's all about me right here. Some of the things I think that have come to mind also as far as helping understand finding our true self are doing things where you find your own voice. And this is probably a little more psychological or therapeutic, but understanding how to find your voice rather than maybe a voice that you were told to speak or ideas you were told to speak or how you've been told how maybe you should act or how you should be. And that can come from all different kinds of places, but finding a way to find your own voice. For me, I'm an artist, so that's how I've learned, I find great comfort and a sense of calm when I can express myself, my voice, that way. But each of you could be doing that in your own way. So I have a final quote here. Spiritual maturity can be carrying both levels of your identity lightly. You are not identified with either persona or the inner you. You feel as though you are directly experiencing life without fear or wanting. These moments are the seeds of mindfulness practice. So with that, if anyone has any comments or questions, complaints about anything I said, we're open for discussion at this point. And if not, that's fine too. Yeah.
Is the idea that I view myself in a way that encompasses a combination of all the things I've done, all the interactions I've had with people, and how I feel about myself.
Yeah.
And nobody else in this entire world has that same view.
Exactly.
The way my daughter sees me is totally different. The way my late husband saw me, my mom, Tom, every person. Have is a unique and different view of me, and that's why there is no self, because I'm constantly changing, I'm constantly different, and everyone's perception.
Yeah.
And that really blew my mind the first time I thought about that. Oh my gosh, because we're all stuck in this identity ego thing that is, well, of course you see that I must have good intentions, or of course you see that I am this way, or I meant that when I said that.
And that's not true, right?
And I love how you talked about it being kind of like disarming or almost anxiety-inducing when you think about that, because it feels really powerful.
Yes. And I think that, and the other thing I wanted to say too is, I mean, the people like I've worked with, there was two things I wanted to bring up, is that people I've worked with in my career, I always found it really interesting that before saying their name, they would say, I'm bipolar. I'm angry. And that, I'm angry, so that's a person, you know? And so that's, I think, a lot of this idea of, no, you're not anger, and you're not bipolar, you know? And I'm not even Aaron, but it's who, like you said, the experiences, all these things that encompass and make us, that makes us a human being. And as Buddha said, you know, as far as those processes, they're always changing, right? Your body, your thought, your perceptions, it's always changing. The second thing, and I was sharing with Rebecca earlier, I thought was really interesting. I don't know if any of you relate to this, but I just did a workshop on grief, and I asked everyone to name their loss that they had just experienced, and what that loss journey looks like. And they said identity. And that was, I would say most of the people in the group spoke about identity being a symptom or something that they would say has been the hardest thing about their loss is, who are they now? Who am I now? And maybe that has to do with how, you know, expectations from other people or how people perceive them, but that sense of emptiness that they are experiencing, like, who am I? Now, Buddha talks about emptiness and no self in a very different way. And that is what we want to achieve. We want to achieve that sense of transcending this ego that's really stuck on and attached to, I have and I'm nothing. So I think for me recently, just hearing that feedback from people or witnessing those stories, it made me think about that again, is that this no self is not attached to, or at least the no self I'm going to aspire to is not attached to this perceived identity anymore, and it's part of more of an interaction, a collective of with other people, other beings, so to speak. Any other comments? Or we're getting a little heavy, I know, right? Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Because what I've been working with is, you know, it's your desire, you know, the desires and the attachments and the expectations. So if that's engaging and I want to go after something, like, I need some more joy, so I'm going to go here, do this, it's going to bring me this thing that I'm not feeling. And I feel like the more I engage,
exactly. And that's really hard. That's really hard. Again, I really think it comes in silence. Learning how to be with ourselves in silence, I think, is the best medicine. I mean, I'm not a Buddha, you know, I'm not. But I know for myself, being able to be in silence, people have asked me, so what are you going to do now that I'm retired? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I thought, I've been doing for over 40 years. I think I'm kind of done. And so I've been, what I am trying to work on is just being in space. Being in space. And I learned that from my father. That's what my father taught me as he was dying. And those hours I would sit with him in the nursing home, all I heard was his breathing. And in that moment, that's all that I was. That's all that mattered was that. And so I think, like, I stopped even thinking about, oh, you know, I wonder what the drive home's going to be like. I found myself so focused on this moment, you know. But I think that's true, is that, and that happens to us all the time, right? We're anticipating, oh, you know, I want to feel better. I don't like how I'm feeling right now. We want to get out of our body most of the time. You know, so again, that's why I think this idea of learning how to be with ourselves in silence, whether it's through meditation, and truly, it doesn't take that long to have moments of, with yourself and be silent. It really doesn't take that long. But learning how to tolerate that, maybe. You know, like Todd was saying, you know, the thoughts that come into our mind, checking them out. Oh, there you are. I love how Thich Nhat Hanh would say this, you know, oh, there you are, anger, there you, here you come again. And then he would say, like, you know, oh, well, goodbye, anger. I loved how you used to talk. But even doing those simple exercises, right, you're just trying, you're filtering, you're like peeling away the onion, you know. You're disrobing all the layers of fabric maybe you've been walking. Whatever metaphor, image you want to use, I think it helps us maybe, because it helps us so you go someplace to go dance and then it doesn't bring you joy and then you're like, well, you're really sad or you're mad or whatever, right? So it helps us in working through disappointments and hurt and things like that. Anyone else? Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening.